Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk and wrapping up the year. This is my final 3 hours of broadcasting in the year 2025. So let's make it a good one. Let's make it count. Great to be joined by everybody. Great to be here for a lot of people. What is this, the dip into the office day and then back out for the rest of the week? So, hey, whatever you're doing, we're glad that you're with us today. As I said, we have a packed show. Jim Talent's going to be joining us after the break, talking about Zelensky, Netanyahu. Also, for the first time I heard about what's going on with China and their ammo training. He'll give his thoughts on that, as well as Venezuela. We'll be talking as well about some of the, quote, climate science. We'll also be talking about fears for terror on New Year's Eve. As you know, big celebrations are planned throughout the world. Obviously, we talked about it yesterday, Times Square. There's so many things that I'd like to do, right? I'd like to go to the Super Bowl, but then, like, I think about it, would it really be fun to see my team at the Super Bowl and not celebrating in my city? I'd like to go to the national championship. There's a list of stuff I'd like to do. Montana seems like the most beautiful state in the world. I'd love to go to Montana. But I'll tell you, the thought of standing in Times Square for New Year's Eve, where you have to, from what I've heard, you have to wear a diaper if you're going to get a good look at the ball drop. To me, that sounds awful. Like, that is not a bucket list item for me. And I look at those people, it's like you stand there for what? Let's be honest, the 10-second countdown, maybe the 20-second. And then, by 12:30, the place is empty and there's just trash to pick up. So I don't get it, but people love to do it. And obviously, whoever's going, we want to be safe when they're out in New York City. And Eric Adams actually talked about that today. And we'll have a clip from Eric Adams when we bring our guest on to talk about some of the threats and some of the security concerns on New Year's Eve. And then also this Minnesota fraud thing, which has really just blown up in the last few days. You know, yesterday on CNN, our friend Scott Jennings was on, and he's always, in my opinion, he's the reason to watch CNN. If Scott Jennings is on a segment, that's when you turn on CNN. And yesterday he was having a back and forth with one of the liberal panelists. And, I got to give Scott credit. I mean, every day he's on that show, he stands strong. But when you've got, usually there's five people at the table, three of the five against you, and then Abby Phillip, the host, also against you, it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough. And I give him all the credit. And yesterday, obviously, this came up. And, I love this clip from CBS. So CBS, which, the left is now claiming has turned to being pro-Trump. They did an investigation. And, their wording around it. Again, I ask you, if this was a red state, would the red state be getting, and by the way, the red state shouldn't get, no one should be getting any kind of pass on fraud. I don't care if it's $10 fraud. I don't care if it's $9 billion fraud. Fraud is fraud. And CBS did a follow-up on this investigation. And just the way they talk about it, they talk about, we found that two of the daycare centers didn't have a license. And this is what this is on Twitter. A recent video by conservative YouTuber Nick Shirley alleged nearly a dozen daycare centers in Minnesota that are receiving public funds are not actually providing any service. After the video went viral, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem announced a massive investigation on childcare and other rampant fraud in the state. CBS conducted its own analysis of nearly a dozen daycare centers mentioned by Shirley. All but two have active licenses. Okay, just full stop right there. You found two that are receiving money that don't have active licenses. Now, I would push back, and I'm sure Nick Shirley will do a follow-up. He's been great. I've seen him on a few of the hits he's done to the media. But you found two. So that's at least two examples of fraud in the state of Minnesota. But they kind of just they kind of just move right over it. All but two have active licenses, according to state records, and all active locations were visited by state regulators within the last 6 months. Well, that's your investigation. Let's see what the Minnesota regulators, newsflash CBS, if this fraud is happening the way it's being reported, then the state of Minnesota is part of the cover-up. So I wouldn't trust these state regulators to actually report any fraud that they, quote, found. They also reviewed dozens of citations related to safety, cleanliness, equipment, and staff training, among other violations, but there were no recorded evidence of fraud. In your article, you pointed out that two of the daycares are operating without an active license. I mean, look into those two right there. And again, I ask you, if we were dealing with a red state, or, you know, if this was something alleging Trump, they wouldn't give the pass. Well, we found two without the active license. I mean, they go into the story, and you've seen this way, the way it's been mentioned very minimal on the mainstream media. But when it's mentioned, it is mentioned from the beginning as, yeah, this YouTube influencer. Yeah, the YouTuber who went there and had documentation. And again, we're going to talk about this later in the show with Cheryl Chumley from the Washington Times. But I'm telling you right now, I maybe it's just my 37 years of observing this. I don't expect much to happen. And that's nothing against Trump. That's nothing against Kristi Noem. It's really nothing against anyone in the administration. I just know how it is, and I've seen this my entire life, where, you know, a liberal, someone in a blue state, is accused of something. 90% of the time, they get away, and nothing happens. Right? They might even win another election. Obviously, we had Elliot Spitzer here in New York. Yes, I mean, that was, everyone can agree what he was doing was awful. And again, use of state funds. And then Andrew Cuomo during the Me Too also was sent packing. But, you know, then he tried to run for office again. But most of the time, I mean, starting when I was, you know, before I was 10 with President Clinton and everything that happened in his administration, and he was able to, you know, still, you know, be the I mean, the media was always fan. I mean, they were just treating him as a pop star. So I'm not going to hold my breath that something will actually happen, because again, when we see stuff like this, especially in a blue state, we see people, you know, getting away. Right, the people who were helping out in the fraud might escape. So. Again, I'd like to know what Cheryl thinks, and she'll be joining us in the 5 o'clock hour here on the Mark Reardon Show. But again, I want everything to come out on this. I'd love to be in a situation where the media was forced into where people are forced into actually covering this. I would love to see the media forced into covering this truthfully. But again, I'm not going to hold my breath. I've seen it way too often, and but you know, hey, we'll follow this story, and I'm glad that it's actually being talked about. But again, you did your investigation, and you didn't think it was weird that two of the 12 didn't have active licenses. You just threw that in the story, like, well, I mean, every state has daycares full of children without active licenses. No, you know, and then the mixed messaging from Minnesota yesterday, where, oh, the Quality Learning Center has been closed. And then all of a sudden, these children are being bussed in to walk into the building. And did you see today they put a patch over the Quality Learning Center? Now it actually says Quality Learning Center. But 24 hours ago, there was an official in Minnesota saying the place had been closed 2 weeks ago. So what's going on? I mean, but again, Tim Walz will get away. He will get away with it. Minnesota, no one in Minnesota will be charged. I hope I'm wrong, but unfortunately, that has been the reality for the first 37 years of my life, and I am not going to hold my breath as this investigation goes on. But we will follow it, and you know, hey, I hope I'm wrong. When we come back, former U.S. Senator from this great state of Missouri, Jim Talent, will be joining us. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey, welcome back. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. My final broadcast of 2025. Let's make it count, ladies and gentlemen. And to kick things off, Jim Talent. He is a former U.S. Senator from the state of Missouri, and he joins us now. Jim, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Joe. Let's see if I can help you go out on a high note here.
Oh, I know you will, my friend. Let's start with the president's meetings with world leaders, and let's start with the Zelensky meeting on Sunday. It seems like, you know, every month or so we have these meetings, we have, you know, discussions, and then for the next month we don't hear anything. What did you take away from that meeting, and where do you believe we stand in this conflict?
Yeah, solving this one is the toughest nut to crack. I think the president acknowledged that a couple of months ago and said, as a matter of fact, he said, I thought it would be a lot easier than it's been. And I think you have to step back and look at the overall situation. I mean, this war has been a disaster on a geostrategic level for Russia. Russia wanted to divide NATO. Now Finland and Sweden are in NATO. The Europeans are not relying on Russian energy anymore, at least as a policy. Going forward, the Europeans evidently are going to spend more money on defense, which is the last thing Putin wanted. Syria is gone as an ally because Putin couldn't reinforce Bashar Assad. Assad is now in Moscow playing video games. And he's lost a million men, and the Russian army's been exposed, basically, as a weak force. And so the problem is, the minute Putin signs an agreement that contains anything other than his maximal demands, he takes the L. The only thing he's got left in this war is trying to get as much of Ukraine as he can. So Trump is trying to force him to accept a formula where Ukraine gives up some more territory in the east, but they get sovereignty and they get security. And it's tough to get Putin to the table to agree to that because he really doesn't have a lot to lose by continuing the war. I think they'll get an agreement. I think it's going to take a few more months. And my concern at this point is what do we do when Putin starts violating it, which he probably will. And I'm going on too long, Joe, but I think that's probably why Trump has not hit Putin with more sanctions than he has to this point, and maybe going after the shadow oil fleet, because he's saving that as leverage to enforce the agreement when he gets it. He's just using diplomacy, basically, at this point.
You talk about enforcing it. If that agreement does show up, if Trump is able to get an agreement between the two countries, and like you said, Putin violates it, I mean, what does the United States do, in your opinion, at that moment? I know we're talking purely hypothetical because we're not even there yet, but if we got to that point and Putin did violate it, what does the United States of America do in that situation?
Yeah, and let's take a concrete example of what might happen. So say the agreement provides for some kind of demilitarized zone in Donetsk region, right? Okay, who's going to enforce that? Here, the weakness of the Europeans is a real problem. I mean, I don't think they could put a division of troops on a rotational basis in that DMZ. And we don't want to put American troops there. I don't think anybody over here, you know, wherever they are on the spectrum, wants to do that. I mean, Ukraine's not a NATO ally. So what do we do if Putin says, okay, it's a DMZ and I'll police it with Russian troops? See, that's the kind of thing. So I now there are tools we still have. I mean, the stronger financial sanctions that I mentioned before, the shadow oil fleet, which, by the way, that's what we're capturing in Venezuela. That's their shadow oil fleet. We could do that. There are other things we can do, but, you know, we have a limited number of bullets available, if you want to put it that way. And I kind of think Trump is saving them to try and make certain that when he gets the agreement, we're able to put some pressure on Putin to comply with it. Now, it's why I say it's a very tough nut to crack. And it's ironic, but it's because the war has gone so badly for Putin. And this is what I really think. I mean, he's captured territory about half the size of the state of New York, lost 1 million men. I mean, he's basically become a gas station for China now. And this whole thing was a huge strategic blunder, but getting out of it is difficult. I mean, a blunder for Putin.
I mean, it's amazing. It started when my wife and I were on our honeymoon, and we've been married for 4 years. Sure. So, yeah. I mean, when I think of this conflict, I think of following it along like halfway through our honeymoon and can't believe it's gone on so long.
He's grinding up people. I mean, they've been their policy. The Russians the last 6 months or so is trying to save equipment, and they're sacrificing men instead. I personally believe, and I'm not, you know, getting briefed on the classified stuff anymore, but I think the casualties are worse than they're letting on, but they are gradually gaining ground on the battlefield. So that's another problem, is getting him to agree when he is, you know, winning, quote unquote, at enormous cost, but winning. So he does have constituencies in Russia he has to satisfy, the super patriotic military bloggers, that whole group of people. And he's got to be able to go back with something. When they look at what the cost Russia has paid for this war and how their strategic position has deteriorated, not just in Europe, but as I said, in the Middle East and the Black, they don't dominate the Black Sea anymore. They did before this war started, but the Ukraine sunk, I think, about a third of their navy. This has not been good for Russia, but it's ironically making it difficult to get an agreement. And we need an agreement because it's not in our interests to have, you know, Eastern Europe destabilized by a war like this.
Sir, let's move on to the Netanyahu meeting. The president met with Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday. I mean, that whole situation, number one, you know, the meeting with Trump, they're obviously very good friends. And number two, I mean, is the Middle East just always going to be an issue?
Yeah, well, yes, but there is really a lot of good news. In fact, because the situation in the Middle East has changed markedly in our favor and in favor of a secure and reasonable peace, which is, again, what we want in the Middle East. I mean, we want to protect the homeland, and we and the Israelis have eliminated the major threat in the Middle East of that, which was the Iranian nuclear program. And then we want a stable Middle East. And we're in a much better position to get it now because the Israelis have emerged as what the scholars call the hegemon in the Middle East. I mean, they can dominate their strategic environment militarily, and they're doing it. I mean, they're in southern they're occupying parts of southern Lebanon now, parts of southern Syria, over half of Gaza. You know, they've attacked successfully Iran in Iran. I mean, now it's just a question of coordinating among allies. And what they agreed on was that, look, if the Iranians try and rebuild their ballistic missile program, much less their nuclear program, the Israelis can strike at them. I mean, Trump made that very clear. And then the other thing is, we can't go to phase two of the Gaza peace agreement unless and until Hamas is disarmed. Because you put an international stabilization force, quote unquote, in there, and Hamas is still active and still armed, then they'll use the international stabilization force as a shield, just as they've used civilians as a shield. So, and Trump made that very clear. I can't remember exactly what he said, but look, they agreed to disarm, he said, and if they don't disarm, basically said they're going to wish they had. And that means the Israelis have the freedom to continue going after Hamas. I mean, they're the police force in the region. But really, Joe, I mean, they are the kind of ally we're seeking in other places. They don't just share the burden, they own the burden. And then all we have to do, which is not easy, but is to provide the diplomatic leadership and use our economic power to get other countries to partner in a general peace, which is why Trump's been on this charm offensive with the Saudis, you've noticed, because he wants the Saudis to join the Abraham Accords, and he wants those accords to include everybody in the Gulf of the Gulf states, Egypt, Jordan, and Syria also. Now, one issue is the Israelis want all that, too. So there's an agreement on what we want in the long term. But the Israelis, for understandable reasons, are much less willing to accept risk to get it. Right. So because like Syria, we're willing to take a chance on this new guy. The Israelis less so, because if, you know, if it turns out that he's a radical, they're the ones that are going to be in the receiving end. So those are the kinds of things that Trump and Netanyahu have to work out. But I'm about as optimistic as I've ever been about the Middle East.
Now let's move to China and the live ammo training near Taiwan. What do you take of this, and what does this mean for the United States of America? What and how would the United States get involved in this situation if it progressed?
Yeah. Well, this is all part of a multi-year pressure campaign the Chinese have been engaged in to isolate Taiwan, to demoralize them, to exhaust them through, you know, for example, they're constantly doing these kind of exercises. The Taiwanese have to scramble their air force and all this stuff to exhaust them so that they agree to, like, a, you know, like Munich in 1938, they agree to some amalgamation with the mainland where they give up their democracy. That's what the Chinese are trying to get. They would vastly prefer not to actually have to move militarily against Taiwan, although they're training for it. I mean, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, has been training for decades to be able to do this if they need to, either an invasion or a blockade. But that contains considerable risk for them, because obviously they could end up in a war with us, and then that would also include very probably the Japanese. The Australians, they don't want that. So this is a pressure campaign, and we are countering it by building up our alliances, hence Trump's trip to East Asia earlier in the year, as well as taking steps to assist the Taiwanese to build up their own self-defense capabilities. But it's a real danger. I mean, we are in a period of risk in the Indo-Pacific that's higher than it should be, and it's, you know, a big part of the reason is we have not sustained our naval power there. Don't get me going on that, Joe. That's not an optimistic end of year message. But we're outnumbered in ships west of Hawaii 6-7 to 1.
And is that and something that's being worked on?
Yeah, I mean, they made Trump had been in office a month when he issued his first executive order on the maritime industrial base. The problem is, we lost a lot of our shipbuilding capability beginning in the 90s. And I will say, I was in Congress at the time, and I made mistakes in my career, but this was not one of them. I screamed bloody murder about it. The Chinese have vastly more shipbuilding capability than we do. And it's not just a matter of ships, but they're really trying to rebuild, and I think they will. But this is an area, I mean, Joe, you can change intention quickly. And that happened on January 21st. When Trump took office, but changing capability is a lot slower. You can't flip a switch and you get a new shipyard. So it's going to take some time, and there's going to be a higher level of risk in the meantime. I mean, there are things we can do to strengthen deterrence, and they're moving to do it. This new frigate program, which they can produce more quickly, that'll put more hulls in the water, but it's still going to take a little time.
Well, Senator, if we didn't have a clock to follow, I could talk with you the rest of the hour. I really appreciate the time and hope you have a very happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year to you and all your listeners. And listen, we're moving in the right direction in all of these places. And I want people to be encouraged. But yeah, it's a risky world, and we always have to be vigilant. Fortunately, we have enormous reservoirs of power and influence around the world, and we're using them now. So that's the good news.
That is indeed. He is Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator from Missouri. We'll be back. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back, Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk, New Year's Eve. And we're joined by Steve Gorham. Steve is Executive Director of the Clients of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of four books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development with over 100,000 copies in print. Steve's latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Steve, welcome back to the show.
To join you.
Hey, Steve,
I hope you're keeping warm down there in St. Louis.
Well, they are keeping warm in St. Louis. I'm also broadcasting in Buffalo, where we're trying to keep warm,
but
our governor's trying to take our governor's trying to take away our natural fuel. I want to start off with it's a pretty cold winter so far. How does this play into the climate change message that we hear so much in Washington?
Yeah, we still keep getting these messages from our government organizations. One, just this month, the National Collaborating Center for Environmental Health said that climate change, Arctic warming, was causing more extreme cold events in the U.S. and Canada. We've also had NOAA say similar things, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, say similar things in the past, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You know, we used to call these cold snaps. Now they are polar vortexes or some other sorts of things. And then I love the famous quote from the Dr. David Viner. He was a senior research scientist at the Climate Research Unit in the University of East Anglia, UK, that was tracking global temperatures. And in 2000, he said, quote, children just aren't going to know what snow is. But, of course, that hasn't happened. In Illinois and Chicago here, we actually broke a record end of November for the most snow in the month. We had like 12 inches. 10 inches in places. So, and also your listeners can go to a place called the Rutgers University Global Snow Lab, that website. And what that shows is that scientific data shows that the amount of snow cover, the snow extent in the Northern Hemisphere has been increasing for the last 50 years. But that's not what you hear from the climate alarmists.
No, it's so funny that they just so quickly forget what they say and move on to a new message. I saw a video from Dan Rather, I believe it was 1982, 83, where CBS reported that by 2000, 2005, 25% of Florida would be underwater. That doesn't happen. And it's amazing how they're able to just continue to move on and, change the message. And so many people continue to buy in.
Yeah, my books are filled with warnings. Former Vice President Al Gore said in 2007 that in the summer and by 2014, the Arctic would be without ice in the summer. That hasn't happened. There have been many, many of these warnings, and they all just kind of go away, and people seem to forget them, and we get an endless stream of new warnings.
We saw this letter from these environmentalist groups calling for to halt data center construction. At the same time, Senator Bernie Sanders wants to ban data center construction. What is the concern with all these environmentalists and data centers?
Yeah, this has been growing for a while now, and it is becoming a big issue. I think this is going to be one of the big issues in 2026. It looks like the Democrat Party is coming out for a ban on new data centers. And by the way, data centers are an irresistible change that is occurring and transforming the U.S. electricity, the U.S. economy. But on September 8th, 230 environmental groups sent a letter to Congress. They were saying they had a bunch of things. Once they said data centers are using a lot of electricity, too much. That is true. Data centers are using too much water. In some cases, that's the case as well. But then they went on to say, the big reason is that data centers are using all this energy and they're impacting the climate. And all these big companies that are building data centers, Google and Microsoft and Amazon, they all have these pledges to be net zero by 2030. But they're also admitting that their emissions are rising. Microsoft said their emissions are up 50%. They said a year ago in the last 5 years. So they're building all these data centers and You know, sometimes I show when I speak to groups, I show this image, if your listeners can picture it. There's a tidal wave 80 to 90 foot high, and I call that the artificial intelligence revolution. And then there's this little sailboat at the bottom, and that is net zero energy policy, and the big wave is just going to wash that away, and that's what we're seeing. So now the environmental groups have come out against data center construction, Bernie Sanders, and we're going to see this throughout 2026.
You know, you talked about renewable energy failure, and as someone who lives in the state of New York and has interviewed the governor a few times, Governor Kathy Hochul, I would say that her policies that she wants to put in would contribute to this renewable energy failure. And, you know, you talk to anyone in New York State, their bills, you know, energy bills are already up 20-some% because of the extra pull on the electric grid with this new legislation. I don't understand how this stuff continues to go on. And now to the detriment of people. I mean, you talked about colder winters, the increase in snow, and yet they want everything to run on electric, and they want, you know, every car to run on a battery, which is the worst thing in cold temperatures.
Yeah, and it also raises all the electricity we're using. Yeah, New York has had the most stringent laws. In 2026, they were going to ban all gas appliances in new construction. That's a statewide law. They've now stepped back from that. Governor Hochul has stepped back and said we're going to delay that. They also have, for a couple of decades, have banned gas pipelines to New England. There's a shortage of gas in New England. And so they're importing liquefied natural gas, even from Russia a few years ago, into Boston Harbor, if you can believe it. And New England pays 2 to 3 times as much for natural gas as the rest of the country, because there are no pipelines through New York anymore. But Governor Hochul has just agreed to start up a pipeline that was going. So she's kind of stepping back from this. But yeah, New York has about the number 6 in the country as far as electricity rates in 2024, 24 cents per kilowatt hour. By the way, Missouri was fairly low, about 13 cents per kilowatt hour, which is below the national average. They're doing sensible things in Missouri. But yeah, the green policies are what's causing these rising electricity prices, even to a greater extent than data centers.
Now, you know, Governor Hochul has stepped back, but I have a feeling if she wins in November, she'll be full steam ahead for the next 4 years.
Well, she wants to, but another thing that's happened, you know, President Trump has shut down all the offshore wind, and that was a big, big plan for New York to build a whole bunch of offshore wind, and he has canceled. To build offshore wind, you need a permit from the federal government because they own all the land from 3 miles out. And he has shut off all those along the coast. So the state's kind of looking at it, and they want to build data centers too. They want to build all these data centers that use power. And where are they going to get the power? Well, they can't do it with wind, and you can't do it with solar in New York. It's very far north. They're going to end up building data centers like Pennsylvania is just to the south. I'm sorry, they're going to build gas power plants for these data centers, just like Pennsylvania is to the south. So, the green breakdown is on its way.
I'll tell you, I couldn't think of a better thing than if in a year or so from now, we are just seeing all these policies not only fail, but the idiots that put them into legislation are also voted out. Like, it would be amazing if we could have people finally wake up from, you know, this climate hoax.
Yeah. Anyway, folks ought to get my book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. It's a color paperback. And in addition to the science and economics, it has 150 color sidebars, which are real headlines. And some of them are just crazy. Here's one from the Miami New Times. Global warming makes couples cheat, says a dating website. So, you know, you now have an excuse, honey. Climate change made me do it.
Oh, my gosh. We might have to do a show on people who actually buy that line, sir.
Well, this is only one of 150. There are many, many more that we could talk about.
Well, go out and get Steve's book. Steve, always great talking with you. I hope you have a very happy new year, and we'll talk to you in 2026.
You too, Joe. Thanks.
That is Steve Gorham. He is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development with over 100,000 copies in print. His latest book, as you heard him talk about, The Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Oh, please speak truth to power because, I mean, these policies, these climate policies, I'm telling you, I'm seeing it firsthand. They're putting people at risk. You want to put children on battery-operated school buses in February in upstate New York. That is crazy. That is crazy. The cold takes the power from the battery. You have to heat the bus. I mean, you are potentially setting up a disaster. And, you know, I just Steve's on the right track, man. And I hope he keeps putting the truth out there, and we'll definitely keep talking with him. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon, and we will be back talking with you after this on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having 4 kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
And welcome back. Wrapping up the first hour here on 97.1 FM Talk. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. And, you know, still in that kind of holiday mood. I'm not going back on what I said yesterday. I still want to take the decorations down tomorrow. I think, you know, my beloved Hokies play UVA in basketball at 2. Maybe have that game on and straighten some stuff up and get the house ready for 2026. And, you know, we were talking yesterday about what people like to do for the new year, right? So many people want to go out. It seems everybody here is like me and wants to stay in. You know, they offer the nice meals, like, oh, it's a pre-prepared menu, and you walk in and you get what's on the menu. I mean, that's a little too fancy for me. So we're just going to be grilling steaks. Now, that sounds awesome. But yesterday in the windstorm, my grill blew about a yard over. So I'm not sure the grill is actually going to, I tested everything. No lines were broken. Propane tank seems fine. But, you know, they might be pan fried steaks instead of grilled steaks because I do not know the condition. This morning I picked up the grill. I secured it like on the pole on my patio. So hopefully it won't blow away. But that was, you know, an interesting thing to wake up to because the worst of the wind had already come through Buffalo before I was on the air yesterday. But then I wake up this morning and like I said, it's in the neighbors, like the rocks where the AC unit is in the neighbor's yard. And that's where I found my grill. Brand new. Just bought it this summer. So hoping for the best. So I know I'm having steaks tomorrow. They just might be either in the oven or in a skillet. We'll have to test the grill when we get home tomorrow morning. I also want to say this. This is an observation I made during the break. So, you know, the final segment, Ethan always says, hey, you know, get out by a certain time. And I usually write that down, you know, pen, piece of paper. Well, I'm staying at a hotel today. My parents got passes to the Strong Museum in Rochester for all the kids. So that's what I was doing this morning. Thankfully, I didn't have to go back for the afternoon session because I was getting ready to do the show. But I'm in a hotel. You know, the one thing that used to always be standard in a hotel was a business center, like a business with a printer and a computer and a pen and notepad. So Ethan gives me the time that I have to get out by, and I go look for the pen and paper that used to always be on the little desk between the two beds in the room. That's not there anymore. And the business I'm staying at, you know, not a fancy pants, but you know, a pretty nice hotel right across from the Strong Museum in Rochester. There's no business center. There was nowhere I could go. You know, I like to, if you ever watch on the camera, I like to have, you know, everything printed out. I don't like to look on the screen while I'm hosting. I think you can hear it. It's a little distracted sounding. So I like to have everything with paper. You know, like I'm a little, for 37, I would consider myself a little old school. And I go down to the desk and I said, where's the business center? And he said, oh, no, we have meeting centers, not business centers, which is a little misleading. Now I know what you're saying, Joe. You should have known that. You should have printed all your prep out before you got here. I get it. I'm open to the criticisms. But I found that a bit odd. Two things that I thought were always standard, the pen and notepad. And you know, I'm sure it's been a while. I've just never looked for the pen and notepad in a hotel until today. For that to not be here, that was odd. And then no business center, that was a little odd too. So just some observations I have made in the first hour of the show. But don't worry, I'm not going to let those things slow me down. I will find a pen and paper during the break, and we'll be all set. Coming up later on the show, I do want to talk about this. I know I talked about it in my monologue, but I want to let you know we are going to be talking about the Minnesota fraud case. And again, it's something that a week ago wasn't getting much attention. It's still not getting much attention from the networks except to bash conservative influencers. That seems to be the way we do this now, is if a conservative influencer bashes something, the left and their friends in the media will bash the influencer. And we will be talking about that with Cheryl Chumley later in the show, and get her thoughts on everything that's going on in Minnesota and see if she agrees with what I said in the monologue. And if you're just tuning in, what I said was I've, you know, 37 years, I have observed very little liberals actually, you know, getting called out, one, or, you know, having to pay the political price for things like this. And, you know, if fraud is exposed in Minnesota, you would think that Tim Walz maybe shouldn't be governor anymore. But again, something we'll talk about in the next hour. We are 1 hour down on this New Year's Eve edition of the Mark Reardon Show. Joe Beamer, wow, filling in and back with you after this on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.